Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Michelle Levine, and today we are studying Perek Yud, Chapter 10 of the Book of Daniel. This chapter begins the final vision that is revealed to Daniel, culminating at the end of the Sefer in Chapter 12. The previous vision of Chapter 9 was revealed to Daniel during the reign of Darius the Mede. This vision takes place during the reign of Cyrus the Great of Persia, the king who succeeded Darius the Mede and took over the Babylonian Empire in 539 BCE. Specifically, as stipulated in verse 1, this vision occurs during King Cyrus's third year in 536 BCE. Notably, the end of chapter 1 of Sefer Daniel had apprised us that Daniel served in the royal courts until the first year of Cyrus the Great. At this juncture, apparently, Daniel is no longer active in his royal duties, presumably because of his advanced age. Recall that Ibn Ezra had posited Daniel was about 15 years old when he was exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, and now, with more than 70 years that have passed, he is close to 90 years old. This time frame, however, is quite momentous and cues us in to why Daniel is privileged to this final vision and its monumental significance. For at the beginning of the Book of Ezra, we learn that in Cyrus's first year he had issued a proclamation allowing the exiled Jews to return to their homeland and to Jerusalem to rebuild for Hashem a second temple. Yet in chapter 4 of Ezra, we learn that due to adversarial contentions against the Jews, the rebuilding of the second temple was soon halted, and in the end, its construction was not completed until a much later time during the reign of Darius the Persian. According to our commentators, the work stoppage began in the third year of Cyrus's rule. One can imagine Daniel's mindset at this juncture. It is Daniel's profound concern for the fate of his nation that becomes the catalyst for him to be privy to a vision that reveals about the future of our people. Verse 1 stipulates, Davar nigla le Daniel, asher nikra shemo Belteshazzar. A matter was revealed to Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. Abarbanel observes this vision is quite lofty, for Davar Nigla implies a weighty matter is being revealed with great detail. Ve'emet ha-davar, this matter was truth. Saadia Gaon observes that since all visions reveal truth, this phrase is emphasizing that this vision consists of matters that are unconditional and will transpire without exception. Vitzava Gadol, it was for a long time hence. Or, as Mitzudat Zion renders, Tzava Gadol could refer to an anticipated great army and warfare. Uvina tadavar uvina lo bamar'e, and he understood the matter and was enlightened about the vision. For as Saadia Gaon explains, part of the vision Daniel did not understand on his own, but he needed clarification from the angel. Curiously, this is the only time in Daniel's visions that he is referred to by his Babylonian name given to him at the beginning of his time in exile, Belteshazzar. Saadia Gaon posits this reflects how Daniel was still honored during the reign of Cyrus, even though Persia has conquered Babylonia. We may conjecture that since this is Daniel's culminating vision, the text wanted us to recall Daniel's beginnings when he first arrived in Babylonia and was elevated to a high royal position. And yet, he now will envision how all the reigning empires will eventually succumb to defeat. At this juncture, as verse 2 indicates, by Yamim Ahem, Daniel was mourning, Ani Daniel Hayiti Mitabel. As Malbim indicates, when Daniel saw that in the third year of Cyrus's reign, he recanted his license to rebuild the second temple, Daniel began to mourn for this setback in what he fervently believed would be the start of the Geulah, the redemption process. Daniel mourned, as verses 2 and 3 indicate, Shlosha shavuim yamim, lechem chamudot lo achalti, uvasar vayayin lo va'ilpi, v'soch lo sachti ad milaot shloshet shavuim yamim. From a literal reading, Daniel mourned for 3 whole weeks, 21 days. No choice pleasing bread did he eat, nor meat or wine, and he did not anoint himself with oils this entire time. As verse 4 indicates that Daniel received the first part of his vision, on the 24th day of the first month, that is the month of Nisan, Dat Mikra posit that Daniel started his morning practices on the fourth day of Nisan. Abar Benel surmises in his commentary Wells of Salvation 11:1 that Daniel began on the first day of the month, but did not maintain his mourning for three Shabbatot. Nevertheless, if one presumes this is all transpiring in the month of Nisan, then as Abar Benel points out, Daniel is mourning, or more pointedly, as verse 12 stipulates, he was afflicting himself before Hashem ulihit anot lifnei Elokecha during the Yom Tov of Pesach. Notwithstanding, Abar Benel teaches that Daniel was not hampered by this, for because of the suffering of Am Yisrael with the stoppage of the building of the Second Temple, Daniel saw fit to mourn and afflict himself, especially at this time, for redemption seemed to be pushed off once again, the Geulah more elusive than before. We may juxtapose Daniel's attitude to what transpires later in the time of Megillat Esther. As we learn in Esther 3:7, Haman cast his lottery in the first month, that is Nisan, and in verse 12 we learn he dispatches his couriers to disseminate the decree of genocide throughout all the Persian provinces on the 13th day of Nisan. Assuming a contiguity of events, when Esther demands that the Jews of Shushan fast for three full days, as noted in Esther 4:16, the Midrash Esther Abba 8:6 notes that they fasted on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan, that is, on the first day of Pesach. When initially Mordechai protests they cannot fast on Pesach, the Midrash relates that Esther forcefully responds, Lamahu Pesach, why is there the Chag of Pesach? If Pesach is a celebration of Am Yisrael, being redeemed and destined for greatness as the nation of Hashem, then Esther proclaims, if we are destroyed, what value is the festival of Pesach? Immediately, Vayavo Mordechai, which the Midrash interprets to mean that he did an Avera, a violation, by fasting on the first day of Pesach. Processing the setback to the Jews in the rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash, Daniel allows for a measure of mourning to be abided by even on Pesach. Note, however, that Daniel only adopts certain restrictions. On the other hand, Malbim presumes that Daniel did fast during the daytime, as Yamim is stipulated, but that at nights he only ate necessary foods, but not indulgent ones, such as rich bread and wine. When Daniel receives his vision, we learn in verse 4 that he is standing by the side of the great river, the Tigris, Chidekel River. Importantly, our sages teach in the Michilta at the beginning of Parashat Bo that since Daniel is receiving such lofty visions in Chutz La'aretz, outside of the land of Israel, they can only take place at a pure place, as a body of water, as we previously noted regarding Daniel's visions in chapter 8 at the stream of Ulai. Daniel envisions an angelic figure, presumed by our commentators to be the angel Gabriel, who had appeared to Daniel in previous chapters. As verses 5 through 6 describe, I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like a blue jewel Tarshish, and his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes as torches of fire, his arms and his feet like the color of burnished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. Malbim explains that this angel in the appearance of a man appears in white linen clothing to signify purity from materialism and the attribute of mercy. We could correlate this to the clothing worn by the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim. Yet his entire body radiates gold and fire, signifying the attribute of justice. Sa'adya Gaon adds that the angel's loins are girded to signify he is a divine messenger sent on a mission. This manner of appearance corresponds to the chariot vision that Yechezkel envisions in chapter 1 of his prophetic book. As such, similar to when Yechezkel hears the noise of the wings of the living creatures in 1:24, like a noise of tumult, as the noise of an army, when Daniel heard the angel speak, he hears as if a large crowd is speaking. Yet we are informed that there are others in Daniel's vicinity, when he receives this exalted vision, but with a clear difference. As verse 7 relates, V'ra'iti ani Daniel levadi et hamara'ah, V'ha'anashim asher hayu imi lo ra'u et hamara'ah, Aval charada gedola nafala alehem, V'yivrechu behechave. And I, Daniel, saw the vision, for the men that were with me did not see the vision. However, a great trembling fell upon them, and they fled to hide themselves. Presumably, as Ramban, in his commentary on Bereshit 18:1, and Saadi Gaon observe, Daniel initially begins to sense the presence of the angel while awake, for otherwise, why would there be a question as to whether others could see the vision or not? Yet while Daniel is privy to the actual vision of this angel, in his linen garb and fiery appearance, the others do not see, yet they sense that some divine presence is among them, leaving them trembling from the sensation and compelling them to hide from fear. As Yosef ibn Yahya explains, it is only Daniel, who has been so personally and intimately affected by the Jews' suffering, mourning, and refusing indulgences, who is privileged to learn from the angel what destiny awaits his people. From a logical perspective, Saadia Gaon posits that these men are the companions who have been named along with Daniel in earlier parts of the Sefer, that is, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. This is an interesting premise, as we have not heard about the fates of these three tzaddikim since chapter 3. Does this imply they have been with Daniel all these years, even though their story has, so to speak, ended with their rescue from the fiery furnace? Yet Chazal in Masechet Megillah 3a claim that the men with him are the last prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. This raises the question about Daniel's status and standing in relation to these prophets. The Gemara answers, Inhu adifi mine, diinhu nivie, viihu lav navi. Ihu adif minaihu, diihu chaza, viinhu la chazo. They were greater than him, as they were prophets, and he was not a prophet. However, he was greater than they, as he saw this vision, and they did not see this vision. This Gemara once again raises the question about how to categorize Daniel in relation to the lofty visions he receives. Is he a prophet? If so, why is he never called as such, a Navi? Why is his Sefer in Ketuvim and not in Nevi'im? Rashi explains that Chazal intend, Shenitnabe'u liYisrael bishlichuto shel makom, vehu lo nishtaleach liYisrael bishum nevuah. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi are prophets in the sense that they are sent by Hashem to transmit the divine word to the people. But Daniel is not recognized in this manner as a prophet because his role is different. He has private visions that are commanded to be sealed and especially not communicated to the public. And yet, the Gemara indicates that contrary to these three prophets, it is only Daniel who can perceive such secret and enigmatic visions as revealed to him. As such, Abarbanel maintains that Daniel is a prophet in the full sense of the means of how he receives these visions and the substantial significance of his visions, revealing the future of all of world history. Yet he is not a Navi Shaliach, sent to the people themselves on this type of divine mission. Notwithstanding, what is so impressive about Daniel is that while we do not see any interaction between him and his fellow Jews and the developing community that burgeons in the wake of the destruction of the first Beit Mikdash, it is Daniel who always has his people in his heart and mind. It is Daniel who davens and mourns on their behalf. And it is therefore Daniel to whom Hashem reveals the most momentous of all visions about the eventual messianic times. Ultimately, Daniel is overcome by the greatness of this vision before him, and he has a strong physical reaction. As verse 8 relates, V'lo nish'ar bikoach, v'hodi nehepach alay l'mashchit, v'lo atzaruti koach. No strength remained in me, and my vigor turned to pallor, and I retained no strength. When he hears the angel's voice, he falls into a deep sleep with his face to the ground, as verse 9 describes. But the angel insists that Daniel wake up and stand up. As verse 11 relates, the angel says to Daniel, Vayomer elai, Daniel, ish chamudot, havein badvarim asher anochi dover elecha, ve'amod al omedecha, ki ata shulachti elecha, uvedabero imi et hadavar hazeh, amadati mar'id. Daniel, you man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you, and stand upright, for now I am sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood trembling. As Rav Weiss in Sefer Mishpitzot Zahav explains, Daniel must be clear-headed to acknowledge the honor of the divine messenger and his portentous message. Gabriel tells Daniel in verse 12, Al tira Daniel, ki min hayom harishon asher natata et libecha la'avin ulehitanot lifnei elokecha, nishme'u devarecha, vanivati bidvarecha. Daniel, do not fear, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand, that is, from his first day of Avelut, already Hashem had decided to reveal great things to him. For nishme'u dvarecha, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. Such impactful words. The angel tells Daniel the Ish Chamudot, when you already started to show your care and concern for Am Yisrael through your acts of Avelut, already then Hashem heard you. All we need to do is show Hashem how much we are suffering, that we want Ge'ulah to happen, that we want to rebuild his Beit HaMikdash. And already, we learn from Daniel, Hashem is listening to us. But there is even more significance to the potency of Daniel's Avilut in this context, and his concern for Am Yisrael. For in verses 13 through 14, Gabriel divulges, Vesar malchut paras omed lenegdi 21 yom. Vihine Michael, achad asarim arishonim, bal ozreni. Vaani notarti sham etzel malche paras. Uvati lahavinecha et asher yikra laamecha beacharit hayamim, ki od chazon lamoed, layamim. But the heavenly prince of Persia stood opposed to me for 21 days, until Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had remained there alone by the kings of Persia. And I have come to give you understanding about what will befall your people in the end of days, for there is yet a vision for those days, ki od chazon layamim. During the time frame of the 21 days that Daniel has been mourning, a heavenly war has been taking place between the prince of the kingdom of Persia who opposes Israel and the angelic agents who have come to help against these oppressive forces. Conflicts between earthly kings are mirrored in struggles between heavenly princes and angelic representatives of the kingdoms on earth. As Rav Yigal Ariel in his Sefer Mor VaHadas explains, Daniel perceived that this is a time of trouble, and it is his avelut during this time, his concern for Am Yisrael, that is as if has provided as well a help to the angels fighting on behalf of Am Yisrael in their heavenly domain. In a broader sense, we should ponder how our tefillot connect us to the upper worlds and can have reverberations in the heavenly domain. And therefore, aside from perhaps his advanced age, this might be the reason why Daniel does not make Aliyah when Cyrus allows the Jews to return to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. As Abar Benel speculates, Daniel remains in Shushan, and it is there that he continues to intercede on behalf of the Jews in exile. In this context, we are also introduced to the concept that there are heavenly princes that strengthen or weaken the kingdoms of the world. Noting this context in our chapter, Ramban on Vayikra 18:25 explicates, additionally based on Devarim 4:19, that Hashem allots a particular kochav umazal, celestial ministers and powers, with jurisdiction over all the world's nations. When Hashem withdraws the influence of a nation's celestial minister, then that nation and its king loses its sovereignty in the world. Notwithstanding, Ramban stipulates that Israel is different. For as a nation, we are only under the direct, exclusive guidance and providence of Hashem. If so, what are the roles of the angels, Gabriel and Michael? As Abar Benel and Raubag explain, these celestial ministers do not serve in the capacity of ministers over the earthly nations, but they act as intercessors on behalf of the nation of Israel to weaken the heavenly princes who determine the power of Israel's enemies on earth. And it is especially Michael, who is described as Israel's prince in verse 21, Salchem, who serves before Hashem to ask mercy on behalf of Am Yisrael. When the Jews are in exile, Michael, serves to strengthen and protect and defend Israel against all the opposing forces. And his defense of Am Yisrael becomes especially potent with the help of Daniel's actions below. Gavriel further informs Daniel that there will be additional opposing forces to Am Yisrael before the advent of Messianic times. For while Gavriel will succeed in his battle with the celestial minister of Persia with the help of Michael, we learn in verse 20 that the prince of Greece then approaches, signaling their upcoming persecution. With these ominous and grave revelations, Daniel's whole composure responds with weakness and an overwhelming sense of foreboding. As verse 15 describes, when he hears these words, I set my face to the ground and was dumbfounded, to the point that being without strength, as noted in verse 16, the angel must repeatedly strengthen Daniel and encourage him not to fear. Significantly, the verb be strong, chazak, is noted four times in verses 18 through 19, for Gavriel emphasizes to Daniel, as Abarbanel explains, that while there will be suffering at the hands of the Greeks, nevertheless having this foreknowledge about the future is important, even though these decrees are already sealed, as declared by the angel in verse 21, Rashum Bichtav Emet, inscribed in writing of truth. Yet Gavriel leaves Daniel with a word of comfort in verse 21. The angel Michael will be there to protect and strengthen our people. This shiur is dedicated by Arlene and Arthur Ice and Michelle and Dov Schwartz and families. Le'ilui Nishmat, our beloved and much missed father, William T. Steinlauf, Tritel Ze'ev Ben Baruch, on his 25th yahrzeit. His love of Hashem, Torah, community, and family has served us as an inspiration and guide for his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.